Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What's up, everybody? A little bit of a hiccup on the way into the show there, but hey, wouldn't be the Orange and Black Insider without one of those happening. I'm Anthony Cazenza. He is John Sheeran. It is the middle of the week, getting you through your hump day, talking some Cincinnati Bengals, and after a little bit of a lull in news, the Cincinnati Bengals made a pretty big move, one that was a little bit predictable, but still a pretty big move, figuratively, literally, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. For their team, their roster, and their offense. Again, I'm Anthony. He's John. John, what's up, buddy?
It wouldn't be a Bengals free agency without a little bit of anxiety kind of peeping in there between some pretty big news and whatnot. There's always going to be that weekend lull where people are way too addicted to their phones or constantly scrolling and refreshing Twitter, assuming that something's happening at the Bengals stadium. But like recent years, they end up getting something done. So now we got something to talk about.
We do have something to talk about. And one thought I had... And I, you know, we didn't really prep this as a topic in general in free agency, but we can kind of talk about it a little bit in our next segment. But really, to me, this has been a blend of kind of old school outside free agency, Marvin Lewis free agency type of stuff, as well as this new wave of free agency, this new philosophy on outside free agents under Zach Taylor and this coaching staff. I don't know if you agree with that, but there's kind of still the rental deal stuff. There's some guys that you felt like, you know, man, this guy would have been great here 2 years ago, right? And instead you didn't spend the money then, you didn't pursue them then, or it just didn't work out then. And now here they are. There's probably, I can name probably three guys where you go, maybe even four, where you go, wow, you wish you would have re-signed him, wish you would have kept him, wish you would have made that happen 2-3 years ago and not this year, but hey, better late than never.
Yeah, I mean, if we just want to run down like all the moves really quick in terms of just on the outside, there was obviously you had Geno Stone starting things off over a week ago, coming in at safety, 2 years, $14 million, up to $15 million, up to is going to be used a lot nowadays. Zach Moss, the running back, 2 years, $8 million. Combining that with ended up trading Joe Mixon, which I think was one of the surprises of free agency in general, and then him getting a new deal with Houston, great for him. Tight end Mike Gesicki, a 1 year rental deal type situation, about $2.5 million, up to $3.25 million for him. Sheldon Rankins, pretty big swing for an older defensive tackle, 2 years, $23.5 million, up to $24.5 million, but comes in and now is a partner of BJ Hill at three technique. bringing back Von Bell after letting him go last year on a significantly cheaper deal, even cheaper than the one that they offered him to come back this time last year. He's going to get vet minimum as the Carolina Panthers pay the remainder of his $6 million salary. And then yesterday, Trent Brown, one-year deal. The financials are still unknown as of this recording, but I think you're right, man. It's a good blend of, obviously, in the Marvin Lewis era, you would never see the deals happen during legal tampering. I don't even think they knew that legal tampering was a thing before Zach Taylor came into town. But right, yeah, like the Gesicki deal, like that's his third, I think, contract. So he's not exactly on the younger side compared to some of their more recent signings, but definitely a talented guy that's here for cheap. And you assume that he's going to boost his value this time next year after a good season with Joe Burrow, which has been the plan at tight end in recent years. Sheldon Rankins is a bit on the older side, which I remember, like, even the quote-unquote premier signings under Marvin Lewis, like, they didn't always really care about age. I think Preston Brown kind of comes to mind. I think even Cordy Glenn was in his upper 20s as well. So Sheldon Rankins is going to be 30 this year, so was a little bit outside at least the Zach Taylor era of barometer in terms of just the age requirement, but a guy that we definitely, you specifically, profiled as a clear fit, and that obviously makes a ton of sense. And then Trent Brown, again, still is more like the newest Riley Reiff in this case, only a much better track record, has played the right tackle position before, fits perfectly with their specific pass protection scheme because he's always used to being on an island. He's never used to getting any help because every team he's been with trusts him out there on one-on-one situations, has had experience against the best pass rushers in the NFL. And I guess Von Bell is like that reach, right? It's essentially Michael Johnson 2.0, only for a lot cheaper, right? You lose him, you get a comp pick for him, and you bring him back after his new team just didn't want anything to do with him, I guess, for whatever reason, after years. So a good mix, and I think for the most part, Anthony, it wasn't perfect. I don't think you could grade this free agency as an A necessarily, but very, very solid job, and I think the team has definitely improved.
Well, let's talk about Trent Brown then, specifically, because I also want to talk about how much better do we think this team is? Are they better? Are they the same? You know, all that kind of stuff with these acquisitions. And oh, mind you, when you mentioned that the new guys from the outside coming in, I mean, there are a slew of other guys that they've brought in from the inside, and that also kind of goes back to that Marvin Lewis era, let's focus inward approach a bit. And you're looking at your Drew Sample, who got a little bit of a heftier contract than I think most anticipated. Trenton Irwin, he's back. I mean, technically T. Higgins is back on the franchise tag. We'll see what happens with that one. Akeem Davis Gaither, I think a nice rotational player that they were able to keep around. So they were also able to keep around a lot of their own guys and focus that way, as well as then, you know, kind of get this early surge, sit the next couple of days out, and then, you know, make another nice move as that mania dies down. And there's still these veteran guys that you can get on these reasonable deals, rental deals, that sort of thing. But Trent Brown did sign with the Bengals. You mentioned it, John, a one-year deal. Two of just the most massive human beings paired up to play tackle. I think they're the two biggest guys in terms of a tandem playing tackle, offensive tackle across the league here. Trent Brown has a really good track record in terms of PFF metrics and all kinds of other ways you want to look at it as a pass protector. So that in itself seems to solidify that right tackle position. I know Jonah had a decent year by a lot of different standpoints last year, but this, even for a year, seems to be a really good route for the Cincinnati Bengals. And then particularly when you look at how deep and talented this draft class is at offensive tackle, you're not desperate to go rush and get a rookie, plug and play. You can let them develop, groom behind these two guys who have had a lot of success in the league.
I think their plan at tackle, I think, has always been to get a bridge, get a guy that you think can start and start well for a year, and then look to the future, because you weren't going to find the long-term option to replace Jonah on the market. Those guys very rarely, if not ever, hit the free agent market. Even like the best option this year was Trent Brown's teammate Mike Mwenu, and he went back to the Patriots on a deal that I don't think the Bengals would have been able to match necessarily. So Trent Brown ended up being by far like the best bridge stopgap option that the Bengals could have gotten. But he was available for a reason, right? For as good, and we can go through all the positives, and we just went through some of them. Even in this like perception of you don't want the Bill Belichick era type players because they never really play well in New England. He would have fit like that perfectly because of what happened when he first left New England for the Raiders. Remember, he signed essentially the Orlando Brown contract. It was 4 years, $66 million. He ended up getting injured. He was on the exempt list. He got out of the Raiders traded him back to the Patriots after 2 years. And then he's been with the Patriots for the past 3 years, and he's remained a solid player there. So there's the risk of taking him out of the environment where he's had his most success. And there's just that general thing with Patriots players in general. But I think when you look at him and what he does well, like with Jonah and the right tackles that they've had before him, there was always trouble against the AFC North and the elite edge rushers, and it was always a mismatch in those very important games. And for as decent and solid as Jonah was, that was definitely a shortcoming. Trent Brown gives you the confidence now in both your perimeter blockers that you can at least contain the likes of Myles Garrett and TJ Watt a little bit better. You're never going to shut them out completely. They're always going to be, you know, big warts on the scouting report before those games. But Trent Brown gives you a chance to compete in ways that, unfortunately for Jonah, that wasn't really on the table necessarily. The unfortunate part here is that Trent Brown does have an injury history. He's played 9 seasons. He's only completed 3 of them in terms of playing essentially the full slate of games. Yeah. There's always been these like weight clauses in his contract. I'm sure we haven't seen the full contract detail for him, but I'm sure it's pretty loaded with per game roster bonuses and just incentivizing him to play as much as possible. But I think for any team, especially the Bengals, even if they've had the experience of managing a guy who's a mammoth, 6'8", 350 pounds, there's going to be the risk of running into maintenance issues and running into minor ailments, and he might miss a couple of games. In fact, I think they would assume that he's going to miss a handful of games this season. That's just the expectation that you have. So the plan does not stop at signing a one-year guy in Trent Brown. I think the plan has always been to get that guy first and then look to the draft, a guy that you want to develop underneath a veteran Trent Brown. I'm sure there's a lot that a rookie can learn under a journey, under, you know, a very experienced guy who's played at a high level. But there should still be the expectation that there is going to be at least 3 tackles that play significant snaps for the Bengals this year. And that's why I don't think that offensive tackle has been removed from the first round board altogether. I don't think either of us really think that. But even if Trent Brown is the kind of veteran that they should have signed, there should still be an expectation that there needs to be a guy that can be ready to play this year and obviously in the years in the future when Trent Brown's no longer with the Bengals.
You bring up a couple of really good points, John. And number one is that the injury history is an issue with him, along with the, you know, the crude seasons, etc. But this is a guy, I think, why he was still lingering out there with the talent that he has and the size that he has, etc., was because teams are going, well, I mean, how many games are we going to get out of this guy, right? I mean, that's one of the major reasons he was still out there, and that's kind of the gamble with the move. But if it pans out, it's one of those major upside type of signings. The other point you brought up was, simply put, in the AFC North and who they face in the AFC North. And you know me, since late last year when this season was kind of starting to unravel, Joe Burrow gets hurt, etc., I've been pounding the table for more physicality in the AFC North, more size, more aggressiveness, etc. And this fits this to a T. And not only does it do that, it counters, like you said, a guy or guys who have been major problems for the Cincinnati Bengals since they have been on their respective teams, TJ Watt and Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett has shown the ability to move kind of at different spots all over the line and be a wreck, wreaking havoc from each one of those spots. But the point is like you said, you're not going to completely shut those guys out for 2 games, maybe 3 games if you face them in the playoffs every single time, but you got to limit the damage. And last year, my big thing with those 2 games against the Steelers is you're not even coming close to finding an answer for TJ Watt. It seems like every single game there's a batted pass that he intercepts. There's a forced fumble. There's a sack. There's multiple tackles for loss, and it's in each game. And so a player like this that has a solid track record as a pass protector on both sides of the line, I think that this makes a lot of sense. And, you know, again, with a player like this, Trent Brown isn't the guy who has an injury issue. Maybe it's Orlando Brown. I don't want to put that even in the universe, but if there is that situation, you could slide Brown onto the other side and maybe not lose as much there as well. So I just think this makes sense on a lot of different levels. There is risk to it, but I think everyone's pretty happy with this, even though it's a short-term solution potentially for the team.
Yeah, and again, like a short-term solution was about the best that anyone could have hoped for. That's what Mekhi Becton would have been if they would have found common ground with that negotiation. But obviously, Trent Brown is the more established and proven player, and that's obviously important when protecting Joe Burrow is your biggest priority. I do like what Dan the Man said in the comment section. Start Brown versus Pitt, Baltimore, and Cleveland. Rest him for every other game. I mean, yeah, sure. But I do think, like, on top of the injuries, there was also there's these concerns about him being motivated, and I think the people that have kind of watched him throughout his career, they have a better grasp on some of those issues. And again, it's something that we on the outside don't really know very much, but it is a pretty common theme when you follow him around for 9 years. But I think that's another aspect that the Bengals had an advantage that maybe other teams didn't. There's obviously the well-known perception of what the Bengals locker room is and what kind of coach, what kind of players coach Zach Taylor is, and how he prioritizes resting his guys and making sure that he's treating everyone differently in terms of what they need to succeed and what they need to prepare for the season and everything. So that's, I think, a huge plus for Trent Brown. And also, he mentioned Ted Karras in his opening press conference, and like they had a prayer relationship and partnership working for two seasons, whether it was 2018 and 2021, so two different stints when Karras was back and forth with the Patriots. And he even saw, I think, Ted in the hot tub when he walked into the facility. I think it was like Monday for his visit. And I think knowing that there's a former Patriot here, someone that he trusts, and Karras obviously, you know, backed the process and backed the environment and the culture of Cincinnati. And that was kind of what Trent, I guess, needed to really, you know, push this thing over the top. And having that guy already in the locker room to help him kind of transition into the culture, into the position group, I think that's definitely going to help, you know, keep him motivated and keep him, you know, trying to play his best. Because if that was an issue for 31 other teams, I don't think it's as big of an issue with Cincinnati.
Yeah, and I want to credit Willie Lutz on Twitter. I think he made a pretty astute observation as to the reunions and in this locker room and how, you know, that could continue to build locker room camaraderie, team camaraderie. You know, you mentioned Karras and Brown and how Brown talked about that. You talk about the former Saints guys, Bell, Hendrickson, and now Sheldon Rankins together. I mean, there are a lot of players who have history together, playing together. And oh, by the way, not only does it just build, you know, friendships and that sort of thing in there and just kind of good team spirit, these guys are familiar with each other. They've played with each other on that side of the ball. And last year, when you specifically look at the new defensive side of the ball, and when you lose Bell and Bates, and what was one of the big things? The communication. And so the communication problems may be lessened with the familiarity between these players going forward this year. That's the hope, at least. But a big, big signing, figuratively, literally, with Trent Brown joining the Cincinnati Bengals. God, you mentioned that weight thing. He's played between, 350 and 370 sometimes is what he's checked in at, some people have said. So
I feel like anything over 350 is pretty much like at that point. Yeah. Like it's just marginal at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big guy, but good signing for the Bengals, and they will have a yet another new starter on the offensive line. And man, I mean, you look at the last handful of off seasons, really. I mean, you talk about Kappa, Karras, Folsom. They went the Lael Collins route, and then, you know, I mean, here we go again. But I think from across the board, you know, I know some people still have some questions about Volson at left guard, but I think across the board, the names, the profiles, I mean, I know they want more athletes up front, or we all want more athletes up front, but I mean, the pedigrees and the backgrounds of the guys that they have on the offensive line right now has to be, right now on paper, one of, if not the best offensive line that Joe Burrow's played behind as a Cincinnati Bengal.
And we say that pretty much every year going into a new season. It seems like it's always better.
I feel like a broken record. Yeah.
It never ends up being as good as the hope is. And I think, but the only way I think this gets derailed is a Trent Brown injury. Orlando Brown's been very durable throughout his career, which is a marvel considering he's just as big as Trent Brown. It's not normal for guys that huge to remain healthy for their entire career, but this is going to be the third consecutive year where you have that interior trio still working together. So that's a level of continuity that the Bengals have not had anywhere on the offensive line in a long, long time. Even if Cordell Volson may not be at the level of Ted Karras and Alex Kappen, those established veterans, I think just continuing to work with those guys, and obviously in between Orlando Brown on the other side, it's only a positive. Even if Cordell is no better than he was last year, like he's okay if that's your worst offensive lineman. And then Trent is a objective upgrade over Jonah Williams. I think everyone can agree with that. It's going to be a good value too. And it's still, but even still, I look back at how 2021 ended when Riley Reiff went down at the age of 33. You ended up having Isaiah Prince at right tackle for the postseason. Lyle Collins goes down on Christmas Eve in 2022, and you have who was at right tackle? Who was backing him in? Was that Identity, or am I just forgetting? It doesn't matter because it wasn't good enough. Obviously, it was an offensive line that wasn't good enough in the 2022 playoffs. So knowing that, you know, it's happened twice now before with a similar type of offensive tackle, one who's going to be 31 and has injury issues, they still need a solid contingency plan behind them because we've just seen offensive line durability concerns and injuries just plague and just demolish their chances when it matters the most. So they need to do a better job entering the season than it probably happens during the draft, to be honest with you.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
Well, he's in the fold, and that is good news. But one player who actually came in for a visit around the time that Mekhi Becton did not sign with the Bengals. So those two visits didn't really net much except for a player that, you know, they pivoted from onto in Trent Brown. And so Tyer Tarte, the defensive tackle and one of the, you know, few nose tackles left on the open market, came and went from Cincinnati. And there's kind of been, I believe it was the great Paul Daner Jr., maybe on his podcast or something, that kind of hinted at maybe a culture fit, quote unquote, or something to that effect, that maybe wasn't jiving as well there. Maybe it was. I mean, to me, I think this still comes down to maybe at least some contractual issues. But the Bengals lost DJ Reader, big loss obviously for them, and now they've kind of been exploring some nose tackle options, and this was one of the few that they've kind of showed some veteran interest in, and nothing has happened there. So I don't know, what's your take on this, John?
Yeah, I think the general vibe is that it was sort of like a culture thing in terms of like they didn't really see him as a fit on the team and in the locker room and everything. And that kind of tracks to the things that we kind of heard about how Tarte left the Titans in the first place. The whole thing with him is that they were negotiating an extension, I think before like the 2023 season, and things didn't go necessarily as planned for Tarte. So he kind of soured on the Titans. The reports about like him just lacking effort and maybe even quitting to a certain degree. Titans waived him in the middle of the season. Bengals placed a waiver claim on him, as well as other teams. The Texans ended up with him. So there was that concern about, you know, motivation in general and just, you know, not giving it your all. But still, like, the Bengals had interest. They obviously wanted him to replace DJ Reader at the end of this past season when DJ Reader went down. So they had him in for a visit. And at least on the surface now, it seems like those concerns are kind of real and kind of track. So it's now, I think, a game of patience with the Bengals, because there have been other defensive tackles that have gone off the board to sign, you know, pretty small contracts with other teams. So Tarte clearly looks like the best available option remaining, but he obviously hasn't been signed by the Bengals or any other team, and I don't believe he's been on a visit with any other team, so I don't imagine interest in him is pretty large. So there's a possibility that the two sides kind of come back together, and maybe if the Bengals, I think the Bengals did offer a contract with him, and I don't know if that was like the breaking point, but I think it was clearly reflective on, you know, how they kind of felt about him and how comfortable they were about him with the team. So I can't imagine it was that attractive of an offer, but if he's not getting any offers anywhere else, he would get playing time here. It's not impossible that it doesn't work out at this point, but I think right now all eyes are pretty much on the draft as to how to best mitigate the loss of DJ Reader at this point, even if Tart is still technically on the table.
Yeah, and I mean, we are, what, a week and a half maybe into free agency here? So, I mean, there's still another wave potentially coming here of players, but this could also signal a guy, because of the depth at defensive tackle in the draft in general, whether it's, you know, the three techs or the nose tackle spots, or you know, some of the depth in some of these other positions and some of these guys still kind of floating out there. There's that extra wave of free agency that comes after the draft when you don't get some of the positions or players you've targeted on your draft board. And oh, by the way, there's some of these, you know, pretty solid veterans that you could get out there on a low risk, high reward deal. So Tart may sign sooner rather than later, but he could also be one of those post-draft guys that ends up landing with the team, maybe even the Bengals, depending on what they do at nose tackle in the draft.
Yeah, I did look back at the past couple of years to see if there was any history with this. I think Trent Taylor was a workout, tryout type player, I think in the middle of May of 2021, and that's how he joined the team. But in terms of like directly post-draft signings, it's been Kevin Huber and Trevor Siemian. So obviously Huber stayed around for at least a year or two after mm-hmm. he was released or just not signed back. And then I think they had Siemian in for a visit before last year's draft, and then they didn't draft a quarterback, so then they signed Siemian like right after. And obviously he didn't make the team or anything, but that's been the extent of like the Zach Taylor Bengals in terms of post-draft free agency. So there's obviously not a great sample size, but obviously a nose tackle or a 2i that's slated to play hundreds of snaps, it's a much bigger role than just a backup quarterback who hopefully doesn't play. And obviously, you know, a punter's a punter. So like it's a bigger need for sure. And I think that could stimulate some urgency if they don't find what they're looking for in the draft, but they got 10 picks. I think the draft sets up decently well to find guys that can rotate in and out of that spot. It's probably going to be at this point, Anthony, like you're not going to replace DJ Reader with one person. Tier Tart is not going to be the only guy that they could have to even come close to replicating that. So it's either, you know, just throw a bunch of bodies at the solution, or you just have to evolve the defense a little bit. I think Andrew Russell, PFF, laid out some good numbers in terms of teams that had at least at like 100 snaps for like true A-gap players. Because DJ Reader, I think by PFF standards, like he played the 2i spot, which is right inside the guard's inside shoulder. So
yep.
there's, I think, it's up for debate as to whether or not that was like an A-gap or B-gap player, but he was truly a 2-gap player by heart. But in terms of like just head up on the center, which is what I think people visualize a nose tackle to be, that position's kind of dying off. And that's been the trend for the past few years. And Reader was such a unicorn in that he was so strong but also quick that he could 2-gap at that spot. He could play on top of the guard as well. So a player that big and that strong and obviously quick and able to play with leverage, like that's like he was a rare breed, and that's why he still got the deal that he got with Detroit despite the medical concerns. But a lot of teams don't play with that type of player. And that could be the case where the Bengals defense goes, because if you can't replace Reader's exact role, then you have to just make do with what you have and you have to adjust course a little bit. So that could involve drafting other types of defensive tackles and just kind of filling that spot in different ways. And like, I think we'll get a better idea after they actually add to the defensive tackle room aside from Sheldon Rankins.
Very, very well could be a by committee approach. And I think, you know, the league has trended to more find pressure from anywhere, you know, pressure the quarterback from anywhere on the defensive line. And so that may be a little bit more of the focus and elimination of the big passing plays that we saw last year. Hello, Houston Texans, they may be trying to, hey, you know, we'll give up a little bit more on the ground, or maybe even the, you know, the same, because DJ Reader is great, but I mean, the Bengals rush yards per game given up were still pretty high with him in it, in the lineup. So, you know, they may still want to give up or be willing to kind of concede a little bit in the run game in order to eliminate some of those big pass plays. And that's why they went after two different safeties in outside free agency, Von Bell, Geno Stone, and shored up some other areas like interior pass rush, along with BJ Hill for Sheldon Rankin. So yeah, Tier Tart, we'll see what happens. Hasn't been getting a lot of other bits of attention aside from the Bengals, but a guy I think that could be a part of a committee approach technically on the defensive line for the Cincinnati Bengals. We've got a couple more things to get to on the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He is John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. Happy to be with all of you. We've got a high number of live viewers once again, and appreciate you tuning in to our live feed, however you may be doing so, whether it's through a number of Twitter accounts at Cincy Jungle, my own Twitter account at CJ Anthony CUI, or the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast Twitter account at Bengals OBI. Go follow those. And you can also go follow John at John double underscore Sheeran. So go give him a follow as well. Great stuff from him. The live video, live feeds could also be seen on the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. So go give that a thumbs up and check out all the articles that we post there, as well as all of the live videos that we post there. And then, of course, our YouTube channel underneath John's side of the screen there. If you're watching on the YouTube channel, there is a show icon, an Orange and Black Insider show icon. Click that. Then click the subscribe button. Click the bell to be notified when we go live and when new content is available, and then give us a thumbs up on the videos as you watch them, please and thank you. And if you like the audio side of things, we are there as well. Our Cincy Jungle podcast channel, our show, Talking Football with Bengal Jim and Friends, Coach, the Coach Matt Minnick, Coach Speak and Chalk Talk, and Three and Out with Jason and Kevin, also viewable on our YouTube channel. But go subscribe to that through your favorite audio streamer, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, iHeartRadio, any of them. Go check us out. We are there, the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. All right, John, we've got two other things to get to. Which one do you want to go to next? Do you want to do the free agent profile that we've got, or do you want to do the winners and losers of free agency next? I'm gonna let you decide, my friendo.
If you're gonna let me decide, then I'm gonna let you go first. So why don't we get to the profile?
Okay, so, and both actually segue nicely into what we were just talking about with, you know, what's next, Tier Tart. So, I mean, it's kind of, it works out well, and we've got some other stuff to get to at the end there. But we'll try and get through this one pretty quick. Look, the Bengals, they shored up a lot of different stuff. They lost some players. They lost some veteran mainstays, locker room guys that, you know, it could hurt you a little bit. But I think in a lot of ways, the Bengals felt that they have improved. Some fans feel that they've improved as well. But one glaring area in which they have not addressed is veteran corner. They had interest in Kendall Fuller, who I think ended up going, to the Dolphins, right? So there was reports that he was with the Dolphins. And I have to credit this rabbit hole that I tumbled down earlier. I have to credit our guys from Bengals and Brews, Dale and Derek and Greg and others and go definitely go check out their channel, their show. It's a lot of fun, and they bring a lot of good insight. Bengals and Brews, go check them out. They just did this Twitter thing, and they were, hey, you know, which one of these guys remaining would you be interested in? And one of the names up there, and of course, USC guy, I kind of gravitated to this guy a little bit. I was big on him in the draft, but he has been I don't want to say like largely disappointing, but there's based on where he's been picked, he was picked, and what he has done in the league has been a bit disappointing. But there are elements to this, namely affordability, depth, veteran leadership into the Bengals that is needed in that cornerback room for the Cincinnati Bengals, wherein this could provide some value and depth for the team on another one of these low risk high end deals. And this goes back, John, this player fits the mold of that old school Bengals outside free agent mindset, where you get a guy on a rental deal that is inexpensive, former first round pick that has, you know, or high pick in general, that has a lot of upside. You hope to mine that last little bit out of it kind of towards the middle end part of their career. And that's where I think this player comes in, and that would be Adoree Jackson. Adoree Jackson, drafted by the Tennessee Titans, number 18 overall back in 2017, and a guy that, has had some flashes, has had some issues as well in terms of injuries, missing time, et cetera. And so this is a player that I think some people may, kind of roll their eyes at. This is a player that some people may say, hey, why not, depending on the cost, the contract, et cetera. I'm going to play a couple things for everybody here now on just a sec here. I'm going to share it. But there's a lot to like with this guy. I think there's also a lot of concern a little bit in the mold of Trent Brown, but look, it's very, very similar to an Eli Apple type of situation where the Eli Apple, former number 10 overall pick, and comes into the Cincinnati Bengals after wandering around, disappointing a little bit, and ends up having a pretty decent career or stint with the Bengals. 5'10", 185 is Adoree Jackson. He's 28 right now, 29 in September. He only has 4 career interceptions, one of which was last year, and it was a pick six. So only 4 career interceptions, not too high. And I know that's not the end-all, be-all stat for cornerbacks, but you kind of want a little bit more in that regard. 5 forced fumbles, one of those last year, 4 fumble recoveries in his career, 376 tackles total, 63 of those last year. I'm going to talk about the tackles in just a little bit here. Also early in his career was a guy who helped out on special teams, namely in the return game. So he could, provide you a little bit of depth there. I don't know that the Bengals would ask him to do that per se when you have Charlie Jones and a couple of options at kickoff return man as well, but could be in the mix there. Who knows? Here's a couple plays for you. Nice play. I think this is off of Jalen Hurts. Gets the ball off the tip and takes it all the way in for the pick six. That was the pick six last year against the Eagles. And then just a nice little pass breakup right here on CeeDee Lamb. So he read that pretty well. Again, the age is a question. 28, going to be 29 right after the first week of the season. He does have that former first round pedigree and abilities. Those are still there. I don't think he's capable of covering the top wide receivers in the league at this point in his career and in just the tape, at least not consistently. He does bring a veteran presence in the young cornerback room. So you look at that, you got Cam Taylor-Britt, you got DJ Turner, DJ Ivy. I mean, this is a guy that the Bengals like to bring in these veteran corners here and there, even if they don't even make it through final cuts. This is kind of one of those guys that could be hanging around and mentoring some of those young guys. And if he does make the team, be down on the depth chart a little bit, but still rotating in and being a valued member there. He's still got good speed. He's got the special teams experience, averaging 54 tackles per year. He's a willing tackler. There's a little bit of pros and cons with that aspect in itself. High amount of tackles, a lot in some of these seasons, but sometimes that also is indicating that guys are catching the ball often around on him. And so he's forced to being able to make tackles after giving up a big play. But you look at the 54 tackles per year and you see that he missed 32 games in his career, missing all that time and still putting up those tackle numbers is pretty impressive. I think in some regards, the Bengals lacked tackling ability. They missed some of the tackling ability from their defensive backfield last year. So I think this is a guy, again, rental deal, low risk, high reward type of setup on the contract. Bengals need veteran corner. I like the guy. I don't like him maybe as much as some other potential options or that sort of thing. But I think in a way, the reason why I'm highlighting this is because this feels Bengal-esque in free agency approach. Former first round guy. Let's mine the rest out of what he's got in the tank. And this just lines up quite well, like an Eli Apple situation. Oh, by the way, Eli Apple, when he was signed by the Bengals the first time around, I believe was March 23rd. And then the next time came around that the Bengals re-signed him, I think it was March 20th. So, the timeline kind of fits here a little bit. This could be one of those guys, again, that hangs around until after the draft and teams kind of kick the tires on if he hasn't been picked up and they don't get the corner in the draft. But again, veteran guy to fill out some depth chart needs. I wouldn't have a problem here.
Sidney Jones, another example, signed March 27th by the Bengals last year. I'm surprised, Anthony, you didn't mention where Adoree Jackson went to college. I thought that'd be the first.
Well, thing. I tried not to.
If no one USC, knows that he went to USC. If no one knows he went to USC, I will make sure that people know that Anthony is talking about a USC Trojan. Everything I think you said makes a lot of sense, though. Just not only the first round pedigree, but the experience. Before free agency began, there was a report that the Bengals were interested in Kendall Fuller, which I think was a surprise to many, considering Kendall Fuller is a starting cornerback, and if he would have came to the Bengals, he would be starting over DJ Turner. So that established some type of thought that, oh, like maybe the Bengals, if the price is right, would be aggressive in giving DJ Turner at the very least healthy competition for that starting cornerback job opposite of Cam Taylor-Britt. Adoree Jackson at this stage in his career, I don't think would be starting over DJ Turner unless he has a phenomenal training camp or a phenomenal preseason and DJ Turner continues to progress like he did at the end of last season. But the Bengals are the Bengals, and they've always valued cornerback at a very high rate, and they've always invested at least talented guys with talented pasts and histories and talented pedigrees. Adoree Jackson fits that bill. He was, I think, a much better Titan than he was a Giant. I think also, though, there has to be the consideration of filling out not just the experience, but the qualities and traits that the Bengals may be missing at cornerback. Obviously, Cam Taylor-Britt, very physical, built very well, and has speed. You can allow him to take on any X receiver that comes through the doors of Paycor Stadium. With DJ Turner, if they're looking for more competition or someone to push him or maybe someone to start over him, I would imagine like the size and stature of Turner has always been his biggest weakness. I say always, as like he's been around the league for whatever, but his biggest weakness coming into the NFL was he had a slighter frame. He had shorter arms. He was only 180 pounds. He looked more like a nickel guy, a guy who can play in the slot instead of maybe a guy who can survive on the boundary. And we saw some of those issues last year. And with Adoree Jackson, he's not that much bigger. I don't think he's any bigger than 185 pounds, which is what he was coming into the league. I think he's got longer arms. I think he's got more length to him, which is why he's had more ball production over the course of his career. That's why he's been allowed to have more ball production compared to what DJ Turner had just as a rookie, which obviously not comparable, but you kind of get my point. So I don't know if Adoree Jackson physically is along those lines of giving them something different than DJ Turner, but I think in terms of just like an ideal backup and someone who can replace exactly what you would be missing if something were to happen with DJ Turner in terms of injury, that makes a lot of sense. But obviously someone that gives them any sort of experience now that Chidobe Awuzie is with the Tennessee Titans, who, by the way, was the highest paid cornerback in free agency this year, which I don't think anyone necessarily expected. Maybe it was an indication of what the market was, and maybe it was Tennessee maybe just overpaying for the fact that Brian Callahan and cornerback coach Steve Jackson knew who he was. But regardless, that's still a hole in the roster, and it's still something that I wouldn't be surprised if the Bengals did address with a guy like Adoree Jackson. I think the pedigree makes sense. I think the pass production makes sense, and the experience makes sense. It would, I think, at least round out the depth of that room, because I think they're still lacking one more body there for sure.
They are lacking one more body there. And look, I made this parallel, and I've been kind of harping on the parallel of Eli Apple, right? And just what happened with him with the Cincinnati Bengals and how he came to them. And does anybody remember why he was signed? I mean, he was signed because the Bengals had two set starters, they thought, in Cheeto and Trey Waynes, right? Those were their starting cornerbacks. Trey Waynes gets hurt, never really returns to the field. Eli Apple is thrust into a starting spot, and we all go, oh, boy, really? I mean, that was the initial reaction. And he ended up being pretty dang good for what they asked him to do in the role he was thrust in. And he was important. Do you remember how well he played in that Titans game, the Titans playoff game? And I mean, he was making a lot of plays down the stretch and in important games. He was an imperfect cornerback, but for the situation and what they needed him to do, he came in and filled in nicely. I think you give DJ Turner his shot, but a guy like this could be either a contingency plan if it does not work out again towards, you know, like we saw a little bit towards the end of the year with DJ Turner. I still think DJ Turner has a lot of upside and could be a very good player. But if it doesn't work out, if there's an injury or that sort of thing, this is just that type of player that you ascend to maybe a higher profile role than you would prefer, but hope that it pans out in a similar way that it did for you with Eli Apple. And so where I make this parallel from Adoree Jackson to the Bengals and Eli Apple.
Adoree is one of those guys where I remember there was a lot of debate regarding like if he was even worth a first round pick and how high should he have gone in the first round. I'm sure there was something similar with Eli Apple. And those are the players that are fascinating to me because they may not work out in their first team or second team, maybe their first or second opportunities, but there's value with every player, right? And there's always a right price and a right role for these guys. And I think with Adoree coming into a young corner, a mostly young cornerback room with potential chances to play should something happen to the guys in front of him, with a very solid coaching staff, obviously a defense coordinator with a defensive background, I think that those were the reasons why Eli Apple ended up being the best version of himself playing on a cheap deal as starting out as a backup and then filling in as a starter instead of coming in as a first round pick for the New York Giants and not fulfilling those expectations. And I think something similar could happen to Adoree Jackson. So yes, I'm in agreement. If they were to sign him or maybe a guy like Rocky Sin, I think that would make a lot of sense to just round out that room.
Yeah, the caveat is Apple had the Lou Anarumo connection from his time with the Giants. That doesn't, you know, there's not that tight knit thing going on here, but I still think that there are some parallels there with this potential move. And again, I want to credit the Bengals and Brews crew, Dale, Greg, Derek, and I saw our guy Porkchop, also part of the Bengals and Brews crew, doing some great work over on their show. But they kind of kicked off the conversation, and I really dug myself into a hole just thinking about Adoree Jackson really the last half day or so, and kind of feeling like, man, this could be a fit for the Bengals and what they need, what they traditionally like in outside free agency, particularly at this point in the game. All right, John, I'm going to give you the floor, my friendo. It's a little bit of winners and losers time, and we're there are some questions too that I think tie from our listeners that tie in very nicely to this as well. But man, we've got a lot of live viewers, particularly on Twitter/X. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in live. But, John, let's talk some winners and losers for the Cincinnati Bengals with these acquisitions that they have made and guys they've let walk out of the door.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good time to talk about this now because there could be the Adoree Jacksons or the Sidney Jones or the Terrell Bashams that come through the pipeline within the next week and a half. We've seen that before, but for the most part, those signings don't have a high likelihood of impacting what the initial week one roster is going to be. So for the most part, in terms of just veteran acquisitions, what we've seen so far is what we're going to get, and everything else meaningful is going to come through the draft, and that's going to have implications as well. But in terms of just free agency, I think the biggest winners on the roster, for starters, is Joe Burrow, a running back who's proficient in pass protection, forcing missed tackles as a receiver. Check that. Tight end who's really a tight end in name, but really just a big slot receiver who's a habit of making contested catches down the field. Check that box. A mammoth of a right tackle who can pass protect on an island better than most. Obviously, check that box. In terms of just making sure that the Joe Burrow offense continues to thrive, all three boxes, I think, have been checked. There's obviously the big question mark at long-term with receiver, but everything on the surface with the offense looks good for Joe Burrow to come back healthy and to thrive in the passing game. We just talked about him. DJ Turner, another big winner, right? Because there was that initial thought about, are they going to pursue, if not Kendall Fuller, are they going to pursue any other starting cornerback to potentially take playing time away? That hasn't happened. They haven't signed any cornerback as of yet. One could come through the draft. One could come via an Adoree Jackson-type signing, but I don't think we're going to see anyone to truly compete for his starting job next year. And after what happened at the end of last season, you know, that he's doing better than some of the other guys we're going to talk about. BJ Hill, huge winner, I think. His best season came with Larry Ogunjobi playing next to him in 2021. What happens if you get a better version of Larry Ogunjobi to rotate in and out with him at three technique and also play alongside him on some obvious passing downs? Sheldon Rankins is going to raise the floor of the Bengals pass rush in general. And even for BJ Hill, who's about to turn 29, entering a contract year, it would be nice to see him potentially go out with a bang with one of his better seasons. And I think having a guy like Rankins play next to him can get the most out of him. And then finally, obviously, Lou Anarumo. I think he was very frustrated last year with the safety play. Even if it was guys who were still developing and have talent, he didn't like the fact that there was probably a lack of trust in terms of calling certain coverages and not being able to rotate guys in and out and not being able to disguise coverages and to rotate guys post-snap. I think everything was a lot more simplified and allowed opposing quarterbacks to tee off on them and create more explosive plays. And that was just a huge, huge discrepancy compared to what was it like in 2021 and 2022. But getting two guys back there that he can trust now, two guys who specialize in instincts and communication in Geno Stone and Von Bell, like that's a huge win for Andrew Rumo in terms of being a play caller. But also just, I think, for the defense in general. It just raises the floor. It raises everyone's just ability to play more comfortably because, Anthony, once you have trust in the guys behind you that they're not going to allow big plays, they're not going to leave giant vacancies in coverage, I think it allows everyone to kind of play faster and more comfortable for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, one winner, you may have said his name, I don't think you did, but Cordell Volson. Right. I mean, that's a guy a lot of people are saying, hey, can we get a new left guard? And here's a nice question here from Mr. Generosity, a.k.a. Mr. Whisper, saying, I still believe right tackle is fully in play. Do you think the Bengals' plan is to draft a right tackle round one and send him to left guard to get I assume it meant get used to the speed of the NFL? Really, one of the only, well, not one of the only, but one guy we talked about and we previewed who may fit this mold to be, you know, guard, move out to tackle and see how that goes would be Fuaga, right? Because of the arm length. But I mean, he tested well. So, you know, I think something tells you that there's still NFL tackle material in there, despite having the shorter arms, the tenacity is there. That to me, and then that's a guy too, like Mr. Whisper saying, you could potentially plug and play him at another spot or just kind of have him be a floating backup, maybe across the line as a rookie and see and continue that development as a right tackle. But that would be a guy that you could potentially plug and play inside left guard. May not be his best or most comfortable situation right away, but I think you maybe try and harness that tenacity and you don't leave him on those islands as frequently as you would a Trent Brown right away, and that may play to his strengths there. There are others, obviously, in this draft that, you know, is he a guard, is he a tackle type of thing. I still think right tackle probably by the time that second round pick is made, a right tackle will have probably been drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals in this year's class. And then, you know, round three may be where you look at wide receiver, skill position type of players in this class. But night two could be, you know, the first pick on night two could be a skill position guy if they do go offensive line in the first round as well.
Safe bet for sure. Troy Fontana is another one of those cases of guy who's going to go in the first round. But I think if gun to my head, if the Bengals think of him as a tackle or guard, I would probably assume guard just in terms of just the size and the arm length with Fuaga is going to leave that up into consideration as well. We got another one from a rags to ruin story. With the struggles of Nick Scott, why didn't Tyson Anderson get a shot? Great size, athleticism, great preseason performance. What am I missing? Well, you haven't missed it yet, but we are going to go through the losers of free agency. And I think Tyson Anderson kind of fits into, well, for starters with Tyson Anderson, he just can't stay healthy. Like, two season-ending injuries. I don't know why anyone would count on him to play significant snaps at this point until he proves that he can make it through a regular season without suffering any bumps and bruises. But in terms of the losers, I would say is fellow teammates from last season. Obviously, Nick Scott is out the door, so he doesn't count. But Dax Hill is the biggest loser of this free agency by far. And he's not even a safety anymore. I think we can just call him a cornerback at this point because adding both Geno Stone and Von Bell, that crowds the safety room because Tyson Anderson is still technically a part of it. I don't think that they go into a season with five safeties with the expectation that they're not going to rotate Geno Stone and Von Bell out. At this point, I think we've kind of realized that Von Bell is here to play because Lou Anarumo trusts him very much and rightfully so. Yeah. He earned that trust for those 3 years. But now you have Dax Hill, who's not going to play the position that he was trained to play for his first two seasons in the NFL. But still, he was a first-round pick because of the work that he played at a position that was not free safety. You know, right? He was a slot cornerback, overhang defender, the star position, if you will, at Michigan. That's his natural spot. That's where he's made the most impactful plays in his time with the Bengals. And that's where he played well last year when he had the chance to play well there. And those chances were limited because he had to play free safety because they had no one else on the roster who could. So I think long-term that position switch can definitely benefit him. But in terms of just the first 2 years of his development, his potential future earnings, I think that's been completely thrown down the toilet, unfortunately. And I'm not saying the Bengals were completely wrong to do it because I think feel like they didn't have a choice, or maybe they thought that they didn't have a choice because of how bad the overall safety room was last year. But undeniably, like, he's got every right to feel very, you know, questionable about the plan and the direction with him going forward. And another safety, Jordan Battle. Like, I feel like if there's a situation where Jordan Battle, who was by far the Bengals' best rookie last year and made a lot of positive strides with his development, if you're just benching him for Von Bell, I'm not sure that's entirely fair to Battle, considering how well he played down the stretch. Like, the Bengals' defense in part was salvaged by the fact that he was playing more snaps than Nick Scott at the end of it. So if he's now going to be the third safety and only playing a couple hundred snaps, that's a pretty big stunt to his own development. And I think the Bengals' defense is better when Jordan Battle's on the field. He made a lot of quality, impactful plays for them relative to how many snaps he had. So I hope that he doesn't just disappear on the bench while Von Bell just takes over for a year, again, playing on vet minimum. So it's not like they're committing so much money to Von Bell that they have to play him. So I'm interested to see how that battle, if there is a battle in training camp, you know, not to have a pun on Jordan Battle's name, but
a battle with Battle.
A battle with Battle, right? Like, who's going to ring the bell, if you will. So I don't know. Like, I hope that he gets a fair shake at playing time, because he definitely deserves it. And I would hate to see that good draft pick go to waste. And this is kind of tongue-in-cheek, but T. Higgins is probably a loser as well. His representation tried to strong-arm the Bengals into a trade right before free agency. We all kind of figured how that would work out. The Bengals operated like it didn't even happen. And then he watched the likes of, what, Michael Pittman, Calvin Ridley, Jerry Jeudy all get these massive guarantees. Guarantees that I'm sure that he wish he would be able to sign for now. But the Bengals still own his rights. They're going to continue to own his rights unless they get an offer that they can't refuse. And they will wait for him to inevitably show up for his first game check in September. So I can't imagine he had a lot of fun seeing his fellow receivers sign some lucrative deals. But unfortunately, I don't think any of us in Cincinnati are surprised.
Yeah, so there are a lot of questions here. And we're coming up on it on time here. But there are a lot of questions about... I know our buddy Porkchop had one about nose tackles, but there's also one about a couple. Iron Man XRP asked about Geno Stone, and then there's another one from somebody else. I can't find it quite yet, but asking, you know, are we going to see four safeties? I think you partially answered the four safety question by really looking at Dax Hill more as a corner this year than a safety going forward. And we've said it a couple times on this show. I think his role now is a Trey Flowers puffed up role, more snaps potentially with him out there, I think is kind of maybe what you're looking at with Dax Hill. You know, Iron Man XRP says, you know, why does everybody think that Stone is such an upgrade? If you review his seven picks, 5 to 6 of them were overthrows. Again, you kind of mentioned this a little bit too, John, with Stone and Bell being back there. It's guys who've been in the league for a while. It's guys who can communicate, and it's guys who have pretty solid instincts back there. And so that's what the Bengals lacked a lot of times. And I do feel that Dax unfortunately got a little bit of the short end of the stick here, because as we've talked about before too, if you go back and look at his tape, he probably had the opportunity for 5-6 picks last year. And you know, I mean, they either went through his hands or one bounced out of his hands into another receiver's hands for a touchdown. And so, I mean, he had opportunities. Unfortunately, it's just kind of one of those, you know, bumps along the way with a young player, first full year starting type of thing. And maybe just not being in that specific role in the league that suits him best. So I think, you know, with that, I think Stone, I'm not expecting 7 picks from Geno Stone this year. No, I don't know if you are, John. I'm not expecting that, but I'm expecting the big plays to be cut down. I'm expecting a little bit more of honesty from opposing offenses against this pass defense than we saw last year, because quite honestly, teams were not afraid to throw the ball and throw the ball deep against the Cincinnati Bengals without Jesse Bates and Von Bell back there.
Yeah, and it wasn't even deep passes too. I really think the nail in the coffin was that second Steelers game where it was just a slant to George Pickens, and Dax just over-pursued it. He ran into, TJ Turner. So it was Michigan on Michigan crime as Pickens just ran uncontested for 80 yards. And that was like the first play for the Steelers on offense, and it led to just that terrible game kind of unfolding. But that it was plays like that where it's just him not being in the right position to make a play and to eliminate, obviously, a wide-open receiver just running, you know, butt naked into the end zone. So there was just moments like that where even if I think Hill had some moments, I think the vast majority of them came with guarding tight ends one-on-one close to the line of scrimmage and just attacking the line of scrimmage when he's lined up in the box or around that spot, which it shouldn't surprise anyone considering that was where he was successful at Michigan. That's where he's been the most comfortable and the most experienced for the past 5 years of his football career. So they tried to make him something that he clearly isn't. And like you said, even if he was in position to sometimes make a play on the ball, if he can't make those interceptions, Geno Stone can, even if the interceptions for Stone by some accounts weren't legitimate in terms of just being bad throws, there's still value in actually catching the ball and making a play with the ball, right? That still creates a possession for you. So yes, it's not always going to be a stable metric in terms of predicting future success. And maybe in an alternate universe, Dax Hill makes those interceptions, but there's still value in actually capitalizing on being in the right position at the right time. And the ball skills do matter. So maybe the ball skills aren't necessarily in Dax Hill's favor, but in terms of just matching up one-on-one and, you know, mirroring guys in the short intermediate routes, I think that's still where he has value. And that's why I'm not ready to call him a bust necessarily, because he can still find the field as a defensive player in a different position. It's not like you're a left tackle like Cedric Oboihi, and then you can't do your job as a left tackle and you rot on the bench. Like, I don't think Dax Hill should rot on the bench, and I don't think he will. I think he will still see the field in very important moments, guarding up against some of the best tight ends in the league. And I think he'll slowly learn from Mike Hilton as they kind of start that transition process with Hilton in the last year of his deal. So right now he is definitely in limbo and he has every right to feel upset about the plan, but long-term I think he can still work out for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of talk of, oh, now he's a bust if he's just a slot corner type of thing. And I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, because number one, there's first round pick. Well, yeah, I mean, he was so close to being a second round pick based on where he was. I mean, you can kind of, you know, flip a coin, I guess, a little bit on that. But my thing is if you find an effective role for him and this defense vastly improves and this team goes farther because of this move and the other moves around him, and it's just a better system fit for everybody, go for it. I mean, let him do his thing. And, you know, there are players the players I'm going to mention are not near the caliber of another player I'm going to mention, and that it's kind of like what the Steelers a little bit did with Troy Polamalu in a way. They just kind of said, go, right? Just, I mean, they gave him kind of a framework to work within. And they said, you're technically on our roster as a safety, but you also play a little bit of linebacker and you do all these different things. Just go. Now, that's not necessarily the same exact thing with Dax and a guy like Geno Stone. But I think what the Bengals are trying to do in a way is recreate some of those aspects where you say, let's let the instincts play take over. Let's let the natural abilities take over, not think so much and maybe not play you in a spot that is not your fit. Again, not the same caliber of players, Geno Stone and Dax Hill, to a mega Hall of Famer like Troy Polamalu. But I think there's a little bit of rationale there that is similar where you go, just kind of play and let's put you here. You know how to play this spot, go. And I think even if he's not a starting free safety or that sort of thing, if he is effective in this role and can make plays, I don't think there's a world where you could call Dax Hill a bust if that happens.
The clock is ticking, though, unfortunately. He has one more year until the Bengals have to make a decision on the fifth-year option. Obviously, he's got 2 years left on his contract. How much he plays this year, I think, is greatly going to impact that decision. And, we'll see. But, yeah, he should still see the field, and I don't think the Bengals should fully give up on him yet. That would be something, though, if he does turn into Troy Polamalu at this point.
I'm not putting that onus on. My point is just free it up a little bit, right? Like, put players in positions in which they can better succeed. And I think that's what the Bengals have attempted to do, not only with Dax, and it may be a tough pill to swallow as to not be a quote unquote starting safety or that sort of thing. But I think it's that mentality. It's not the same type of player. It's not the same type of fit. Don't get me wrong on that. It's more just that mentality of let's play you to your strengths. Let's let you play maybe a little bit more freely because you can use your instincts. And I think that's what the Bengals are trying to do potentially with him.
And that's what they do with Mike Hilton. Mike Hilton is the Bengals' Troy Polamalu.
Yep.
And he's such an impact player. And I think the right plan, and probably the likely plan, is that Dax learns from Mike Hill this year and just fully takes over. Maybe at this point, like, if you don't, if they don't sign a cornerback, if they don't draft a cornerback on the outside, maybe they allow him to take some reps on the boundary. I don't think that's the best idea. I don't think that's where he's natural at, but it can't hurt to see what he can do in the summer when, you know, there's plenty of time for practicing that. But yes, if like losing Mike Hilton in the year is going to be some type of a hit for the defense because he's so unique, but there's no telling that Dax Hill can't do eventually be that guy for sure.
Yeah. Well, we've gone a little long, but this has been a hell of a fun episode. So we are going to drop the mic and get out of here. What you got for us, John, on our way out of the show?
It's been a fun free agency. I feel like I'm a little I'm not disappointed. I feel like in past years, there's been more of a freak out from the fans. And I was hoping to capitalize on that by turning it into some type of a free agency bingo. Unfortunately, I didn't get free agency Bengals freak out bingo. I'm still looking for a couple of reactions. I think it's because the Chiefs, they only signed like Marquise Brown. I was expecting more Bengals fans to freak out about the Chiefs. I was expecting more Fire Duke Tobin tweets. I didn't see that as much. But in general, like I said, we rode the typical waves, right? We had a couple of early signings. We had some optimism. Then we had the lull. Then we had some doubt and anxiety kind of creep in. And then you kind of brought it back up with Trent Brown. So we're at this point now where it's really on to the draft. It's on to pro days. Zach Taylor was at Texas's pro day today. I think he was with Troy Walters, the receivers coach. So we got a bunch of draft stuff to get into with these next 4 or 5 weeks. And yeah, the offseason rolls on.
Let's get to it. I just appreciate Jason Von Stein, who's been a longtime listener of our show, giving us a nice compliment there, as is Natty Ron saying fire show. Appreciate both of you and everybody tuning in live and after the fact. Hey, after the fact, we still love you too. If you can tune in live, do it. But hey, we still love you, and we love all the live viewers. Thank you so much for tuning in here. But one thing, just a funny story I want to share. Over the last like week or so, every time I go to the gym, I see this guy and I'm like, man, I know that guy. I can see it. I can't place him, that sort of thing. And there's this other guy that, is a personal trainer in my gym, and he's, a Raiders fan. And so I'm like, man, I know that guy, you know, I think it looks like Khalil Mack, but I don't know. You know, you work here, you're a Raiders guy. Am I wrong about it? He's like, no, that's him. He comes in all the time. He comes in the offseason, that sort of thing. And he is we talked about Giants earlier with the Brown twins, Manning tackle for the Bengals. This guy is yoked. We did share a couple friendly nods, but he's professional athlete. He's doing his workout. He's got his headphones in. I'm not going to bug him, but seems like a really nice guy from what I can tell. He's nice to the staff from what I know. And, maybe if I get my way, I can, get him, pry him away from the Chargers and see if he can come to the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't have that kind of sway, but anyway, just kind of a fun story where I'm like, I'm just working out right next to Khalil Mack and feeling like the smallest guy ever.
He's what? And it's 6'2", been like 6'2", 250. You know,
he's just massive. Yeah. Yeah. He's just a massive dude, but,
it wouldn't be tampering though. I think there was a Jets fan who sent like a breakfast sandwich to the facility when Mike Williams was visiting. And then Mike Williams actually ate the sandwich after signing the contract. So that fan is like the most valuable recruiter, AC, recruiting guys in the gym.
Yeah. Yeah. I will do it. Just a fun anecdote. And I'm like, man, I gotta say something about this. Cause it's been like, you know, 4 or 5 straight times that I've been there that I've seen him. And I don't know, I'm going later today, so we'll see if I see him again. But anyway, that's going to do it for us on the Orange and Black Insider. John, thanks for everything, buddy. And go check out, aside from where our podcast is and the stuff we do at Cincy Jungle, all the podcasts and the articles and stuff, go check out all the great stuff John is doing at A to Z Sports, celebrating 1 year. Did I see that on LinkedIn, dude? 1 year. Are you 1 year in officially at A to Z?
I think I updated LinkedIn 1 year ago, but I started like the beginning of last March. So that was just negligence on my part.
Okay.
But
still, well, it's pretty close. Yeah, pretty close. Yeah. Congratulations. You're doing some great work. So go check out what John's doing covering the Bengals and AFC North at A to Z Sports. Thanks, everybody. We're going to get out of here. Take it easy. We'll have more stuff for you on this show, on Cincy Jungle, and of course, that side, A to Z Sports. Take care.